Well, hello, and welcome to episode 114 of Motherhood in Hollywood, a podcast that blends beautifully the worlds of entertainment and parenting. My guest this week is Jenny June. She is a certified child and family sleep consultant, and we're going to dive deep into the world of getting our kids to go to sleep. Oh, here we go.
Come on, Mama.
Grab your popcorn and goobers. It's time for Motherhood in Hollywood with your host, Heather Brooker. This is a crude prude's perspective on being a full-time mom in showbiz. She's not a perfect mom, but she can play one on TV. Hold on to your butts. Here's Heather.
Hello, and welcome back to Motherhood in Hollywood. How are you? How's your week? What a crazy week it's been, you guys, with all of the flooding going on down in Texas. Right now, where I live, there is a massive brush fire that's kind of raging through the mountains in the Burbank, Glendale, California area. It's just a crazy time in our world right now. So I want to take a second to send lots of love to everybody in Texas. And if there's anything you guys can do to help, to send, if you're listening to this, if you haven't sent anything yet to help out, any donations, any diapers, I was listening to NPR and they were saying a lot of kids in the shelters, there are in need of like toys and, you know, books and little, you know, clothes and socks and underwear and things like that, that they had to leave behind to escape the floodwaters. So if you have a moment, if you haven't donated anything yet or you've been thinking about it, take a second, look around your house, see if you have some toys that maybe your kids aren't using anymore, if you have any clothes that they've grown out of, you know, little things like that, and find a donation center that you can send it to down in Texas. I know that there's probably a lot of little kids there that would really appreciate that. So, whew, what a week. That being said, I want to let you guys know what I did this week. This past week was so much fun. I got to go onto the set of Home and Family on the Hallmark Channel. And I don't know if you'd watch it or not, but, Debbie Matenopoulos, Mark Steinis, Matt Eisman, they're just a few of the hosts. I think they kind of rotate, hosts every now and then. They were on the show. It was actually, Debbie Matenopoulos and Ali Fedotowsky that was there hosting it. I was there to interview Nicole Nordeman. She is a Christian gospel singer, very well known, very popular, who has written a book based off of a song she wrote that went viral on the internet. And of course, viral on the internet. I don't know where else it would go. Viral in your body. Anyways, I'm in a silly mood. But anyway, I had such a great time interviewing her, such a great time on the set. And really looking forward to sharing this with you guys. If you go to my YouTube channel, the story is up there now, where she talks about the importance of parents getting unplugged a little bit and slowing down to, you know, it was interesting to talk to her because it's like we all get caught up in the day-to-day hustle of parenthood, you know, getting our kids ready for school, picking them up from school, we're rushing to work, we are constantly, it seems like, go, 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 because life demands it. You know, we have to earn a living. We have to keep up with our routines and that sort of thing. But there are little things we can do to slow down and take time to really enjoy our kids while they're young, because you can't ever go back in time. You know, we can't ever recapture this moment. When I stop to think about how in the blink of an eye, my little baby that I was breastfeeding at all hours of the day and night and held in my arms forever and ever is now this, you know, 4-year-old kid with opinions and attitude and giggles for days. It just makes my heart kind of, you know, skip a beat, because I think, where do these 4 years go? So I'm really inspired to make an effort to slow down and myself as much as I can with my 900 jobs and really just enjoy her more and enjoy our time together more. So I'm not going to cry. I swear I'm not going to cry. Anyway, you should check out Nicole's book, Slow Down. I think you'll really enjoy it. And I also am going to tell you guys now, I'm starting a little bit of a new element to the show. I'm going to start adding information about events that are happening. Events that are happening either in the LA area, which is obviously very prominently where, you know, where I'm at and most of my listeners are. But if you've got events that are happening, I know I have a lot of listeners in Canada and Australia, also in England. Hello to everybody all around the world who's listening to Motherhood in Hollywood, as well as the United States. If you've got events in your area that you'd like me to help get the word out, I would love to help you do that. Just a quick mention on my podcast, super easy, super free. Email me events@motherhoodinhollywood.com. I'm more than happy to help spread the word and give a little mention about your event. We're going to do that. Yeah. The first event I want to talk about is the LA Baby Show. It is the LA Baby Show, November 4th and 5th. It's at the Magic Box at the Reef in downtown LA. Tickets are $30 a family. This is a big event full of informative, family-friendly products and companies and businesses. There's also going to be panels, people speaking to help parents learn about family bonding and, you know, that sort of thing. So what else does it say it has? I'm doing a real bang up job on the first events post. Nailing it. There'll be speakers, giveaways, product demos, parent meet classes, and a stroller test track. Woohoo! So you can get those tickets on Eventbrite. And I'm also going to try to find, maybe get a discount code for you guys if you'd like to go to something like that. Also, I want to talk about the 22nd annual Redondo Beach Lobster Festival, September 22nd through the 24th. Oh my gosh, Lobster by the Sea. Sign me up. Tickets are available at lobsterfestival.com. So you guys check that out. All right. So you guys, my guest today is sleep expert Jenny June. Now, if there is one question parents have the most, it is about how can I get my kid to sleep better? And I don't mean just infants. I mean child. Because everything I've read is so focused on like baby sleep, baby sleep, baby sleep, which is super important. But then what happens when they get to like about 2 and 3 years old? Like, what do you do then? What if their sleep patterns are changing? What if your sleep patterns are changing? There's so many questions involved around getting a good night's sleep. And it's because, hello, we're all freaking tired. We're tired and we're exhausted. And I feel like, you know, being exhausted, then you make bad decisions and you make your choices are not as clear. And then your kids are cranky and they don't make good choices. And so sleep is such an integral part of our lives. And it's super important to learn as much as we can about it. So that's why I invited Jenny on the show today. And I think you guys are really going to love what she has to say. So here's my interview with Jenny June. So, as I said, you guys, I put the call out that I have a sleep specialist coming on my podcast today, and literally my phone is blowing up. Jenny June, you're so popular and you didn't even know. Or maybe you did.
No, I didn't know that I was, you know, at least, you know, blowing up your phone.
That's, right? That's my phone, my Facebook, my Twitter. Yeah. You're a certified family sleep specialist. Did I get that right?
Yes, child and family sleep child specialist, family, or sleep consultant.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So tell me just a little bit about your background. I know I interviewed you for my website last year, and I'm so thrilled to have you here on my podcast today.
Aww, thank you for having me.
Tell me a little bit about your background and what makes you a certified sleep counselor.
Well, it started about 23 years ago when I, you know, gave birth to my first of my four children, and I had four back to back, you know, from, you know, ooh, like within 6 years, I had bust out four kids, and whoa, I was in my 20s, you know, newly married and all of that. And, you know, their father wasn't you know, home much. So, you know, it was just me, and I had to manage, you know, the incredible, you know, sleep deprivation that came with being the only one taking care of four kids.
But that makes, you know, me tired just hearing you talk exactly about it. I'm like, whew, okay.
So I was just, you know, I was just desperate to, you know, to learn what to do and to do the right thing. And so there wasn't much research out yet on sleep, but I dug into whatever I can get my hands on and just kind of became, you know, more aware of the science of sleep, and really helped my kids. You know, they were kind of my guinea pigs at the same time. You know, I kind of, you know, experimented with some of them. But, you know, I found that I found, you know, just kind of more success by just looking at the sleep science. The behavioral sleep training methods are important, but they're secondary. You have to really know about, you know, the science and sleep and how it affects the brain and the body, and to make sure we're, you know, we're really looking at the hormones that go along with that and kickstarting those naturally, so that we're, when we do go to use a behavioral method, we're laying them down with the hormones present in their system to do what we're asking them to do, which makes a world of difference. And it just took the stress level of all of that down, and it made it much easier. But then, you know, over the years, you know, I was helping other families, you know, all of that, was sleep training their kids, just, you know, my mom
passing
friends,
along
just, yeah, just passing it on,
stuff,
yeah. You know how it is. And then later on, when I became a single mom and was raising my four kids by myself, you know, I was working as a nanny and, you know, and other things just to, you know, keep things going and,
right.
and managing,
make money,
keep it all going. You know, I found that, you know, people were asking me to help with their kids in sleep training then. And then someone said, you know what, Jenny, this is something you really could and should do for a living. And I just found this certification process. You should look into this. So the opportunity came to credential myself, and I did. And it was with a more holistic institute. Mm-hmm. And then another opportunity came to credential myself with a more science-based, you know,
was that the
approach.
Mayo Clinic?
No. So the first one was the International Maternity and Parenting Institute.
Oh, okay.
And the other one
okay.
was the Family Sleep Institute.
Okay.
And then from there, I just found, you know, opportunities to crash different, you know, medical sleep conferences and pediatric sleep hygiene and, mm-hmm. and different pediatric sleep disorders and such, you know, even things that were outside of my scope of practice. But, you know, like the Sick Kids Hospital in Toronto allowed me to kind of crash there.
And like observe and stuff. That's
amazing. So I got a lot. I racked up a lot of certified additional mm-hmm. credit hours and took a lot of extra courses over the course of the last, you know, five, six years. And just, you know, found that I was really, truly a sleep geek. And I really, and of course, thousands of cases since 2011 under uh-huh. my belt. You know, you just learn a lot sometimes by getting in the trenches and doing it. And,
yeah.
And learning that no two cases are the same. Every kid and family is unique and different. But there are some similarities when it just comes to the science. And that's really what helps. I think it makes the difference, you know, with the success level I've had. And I'm really grateful for that.
So basically everybody, she knows what she's talking about is what I'm getting at. I wanted you to say all of that because I want people to know this is not like just a random person that I asked that said, oh, I know about sleep. You know what you're talking about. And I say this not just because, I follow you and I know I read your posts and all of that stuff, but also when I first met you last year, I was going through some major sleep issues and I interviewed you. You were nice enough to let me interview you for my podcast, and the advice you gave me completely changed our lives.
Aww.
Like, I know that sounds cheesy, but it's true. So we were struggling. Also, I want to point out that my cat right now is really starved for attention.
Yes.
She has knocked over a picture frame and she's doing something in the kitchen right now. What? Is she
she's
doing?
Into something.
She's literally like, I'll show you who's
taking
the star.
Full advantage.
Oh my gosh, yeah. What a ham. So anyway, if you hear me yell at my cat, I'll try to cut it out later. But we were going through some issues with Channing. She was about almost three and a half. Mm-hmm. And we were dropping the nap.
Right.
And I looked everywhere online for some kind of advice, some kind of guidance, because it was miserable. And we couldn't figure out why, because we would put her to bed about 8:30 at night. Every night, like we had since she was a baby, but we also did like a late afternoon nap. You know, she's in that, she hadn't done a morning nap for some time.
Right.
She was still doing an afternoon nap, but it was gradually getting later and later in the day. Like it was at 1 and then it was at 2 and then it was at 4. And I was like, what is the point of me putting her down at 4? Because she sleeps for 2 hours. She gets up at 6 and we put her back down 2 hours later. And then why is she a butthole? Gracie, stop. She just reached up and was like, I'm going to play with you now. And I couldn't figure it out what was wrong. And I knew we should be ending her nap because she fought me on the nap. She did not want to lay down.
Right. And she was at that age where it's, you know, common to drop that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I knew she was tired though. I could see it in her face. I could see it in her tantrums, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody talks about the terrible twos. For me, it was the threes. The threes were pretty rough because she would have these like just massive outbursts from about 2.5 to about 3.5.
Mm-hmm.
It was very tough. And when your advice, you talked about the hormones and the melatonin levels and when they, you know, dip and naturally and all of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, oh my God, we have to do this. We tried it for a week where we put her to bed at 6:30.
Mm-hmm.
It was magic.
Yep.
It was magic. We were like, oh my God. First of all, she went to bed. Second of all, we got our evenings back, which was nice. And she started having fewer and fewer and fewer tantrums and outbursts during the day.
Right.
And we still, to this day, put her to bed between 6:30 and 7.
Yeah.
And it's made a world of difference. Very good. Talk a little bit about that evening time, and then I'll get to some questions from listeners. But that evening time, or what's happening with their bodies when they fight against that nap.
Right. Well, you know.
Or sleep time or bedtime.
Yeah. You know, around 3.5 is the most common age when kids are really, truly ready to drop that final nap. Yeah. And the mistake that, you know, many of us make as parents is that we keep that later bedtime in place and we don't realize that their body needs to go through a transitional period where they get used to that prolonged wakefulness from morning until bedtime without that nap to kind of take the edge off and keep them somewhat well rested until that bedtime comes up. The key is that when that initially takes place, when you drop that nap, you do have to dial that bedtime back earlier to catch that final sleep wave of the night. You know, oftentimes parents don't recognize the true sleep cues that are presenting in their kids. They aren't what we think they are, you know.
Not like when they were an infant, when they would rub their eyes and like that sort of a thing.
Right.
Is that what you mean?
Yeah, those are physiological signs, you know, rubbing the eyes, more talkative, irritable, cranky, you know, arching their back, squawking a bit, you know, all of that kind of thing. Those are overtired cues. Those are physiological signs when melatonin has already left the building it's not coming back.
It's too late.
And there's some stuff out there, you know, kind of floating around. You were looking at, you know, the possibility of potential additional surge of cortisol, those wakefulness hormones, and even adrenaline if they're overtired in addition to that, that at around 8 o'clock at night that happen if kids miss that final sleep wave. So what I have parents look for are what I call relaxed state cues. This is actually the physiological signs. You can see them and you can feel them, not only in your child, but in yourself as well. And I have parents experiment this with this on their own, but it's when, you know, your motions become slower and you're less vocal, so really still and really quiet. You'll notice that your child is disinterested in their surroundings. Their eyelids may get a little bit heavy, or you'll just see them stare off into space, just totally space out, and you know, maybe even a tiny little yawn come out of them. But this window is very brief and subtle. It's about 10 to 15 minutes, and then it's gone. And then all of a sudden, you'll see your child catch their second wind and then be wide awake,
and they're
bouncing
jumping
off
on the
walls.
Bed.
Yeah.
You know, they're splashing in the bath, whatever the case
may be. And it takes
you
an hour and a half to get through a bedtime routine, and you're
and
still
every
doing
night
all the
is
work
a fight.
For them.
Yeah.
Every night's a fight. Because they just don't have the hormones present to do what we're asking them to do.
Yeah.
And that's not fair to them, especially if you're, you know, going to embark upon some sleep training using a properly matched behavioral method. So, you know, that's why, you know, when I work with a family, it's always about that sleep science first. Mm-hmm. My trademarked four pillars of sleep hygiene really set a child and a family up for success. It eliminates the battle, or it reduces it quite a bit, and just makes the transition for different habits to take place a lot easier. It's just hormones.
The biggest issue, whenever people ask me about that, and I direct them to your advice, and I say, here's what we tried, try it. The biggest thing that they say to me, and I'm talking, we haven't talked about infant sleep, but I'm talking specifically about dropping the nap for 3 to 4 year olds. Is they say, I can't put my kid to bed at 6:30. I don't get home from work till 6:30.
Right, yeah.
So I'm always like, I don't know what to tell you. Yeah. Just get home and throw him in the bed. Like, I don't know.
Right.
Like, because we have dinner at like 5:15, 5:30. Yeah. You know, there's a reason why they have the early bird special for old people and kids.
Yes.
Because old people and kids need to go to bed early. Like, they just do. I always tell people too, I'm like, it's kind of like, in my mind, the farmer's schedule.
Yeah.
We go to sleep with the sun. We wake up with the sun. It's very natural, like you said, circadian rhythm in our bodies. And I think that kids need that. So I just tell people we do whatever we can. Even if we're getting home at like 6 or 6:15, it's quick bed, quick, you know, bath. She doesn't eat that much for dinner anyway. So it's not like I need to feed her a big meal.
Yeah.
But what's so important is getting her to bed so she gets that sleep. Because when she doesn't, she is difficult to deal with.
And
I can't blame her because she's just got so many things happening in her mind. She's playing all day. She's doing arts and crafts. She's experiencing new things.
Yeah.
And she's tired.
And she's growing at such a tremendous and developing at a tremendous rate. Mm-hmm. And under the age of 3, it's, you know, it's just so huge, everything that's going on. And if we're not meeting their needs for sleep, then, you know, even if you do keep them at past the bedtime that they really should be having to meet those needs for well sleep, you're not really getting quality time with your child because, you know, they're out.
They're not really there. Yeah. They're just too tired.
You're just managing behavior rather than really engaging with them and having that attunement that really needs to take place. And you know, it is a common problem for a lot of families that they, you know, are trying to manage what time they get home. And, you know, if bedtime needs to be specifically
early. And they feel like they don't get to spend time with their kid, you know, and that sort of thing. And I get that.
I have a lot of creative solutions for that really surprise families. Mm-hmm. And they just, you know, we're so stuck into seeing, you know, our schedules or our situations, our habits and our routines. We're so stuck in that box that we can't see outside of it.
Yeah.
And so it does, you know, take a qualified professional to help them, you know, manage to really look at everything the whole day with well sleep in place with new opportunities. And I have never yet had a case where I wasn't able to provide that quality time with the child every single day in spite of that early bedtime, no matter what parents got home from work.
Right.
And they're always very surprised, especially my high profile clients, you know, like the musicians especially, who have those crazy hours.
Crazy
they
want
to keep their kids up really late with them and want, you know, I've been offered crazy amounts of money to change their circadian their wake up time in the morning to, like, you know, noon instead of
LA and that's so gross.
Yeah.
That's so LA,
right?
Like, hey, I'm a rock star. Can you make sure my kid is up so we can, you know, go to my show? Like,
if I paid you $15,000, can you change that wake up time in the morning?
No. And, you know, I've had friends before who say they're night people, so they keep their kids up late at night with them. They're like, oh, well, he's just a night person too. And I'm like, he's one.
Yeah.
How do you know he's like a night person yet? But I'm like, I'm trying not to judge. That's judgy. Nobody send me nasty tweets. But I'm just like, I think that sometimes we as parents get in our own way and hinder our own desires because we think, well, I saw it this way on the internet, or I saw my friend said she did it this way. And
yes,
you know,
we often get caught up in, you know, the 500 different messages and, you know, pieces of advice out there on a topic in addition to, you know, we're sleep deprived too, for the most part. You know, it's an epidemic with adults these days.
I totally am.
And sleep deprived parents often cannot recognize sleep deprivation in their own children. I see it every single day.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's, you know, when I'm getting after I'm done getting the children well rested, or the process that I put the families through to make that happen with the four pillars of sleep hygiene, they recognize that it's helping them sleep just naturally by proxy, you know, that it's effective for their sleep as well. And then everybody's quality of life just dramatically and radically improves.
Yeah.
And they're all of a sudden able to really manage their day with a lot more productivity and focus and creativity and enjoyment. Right?
And, I want that.
Yeah.
We have a major sleep issue in our house. Channing is a great sleeper. She's really always been a champion sleeper from day one, and moms used to hate me. I was the one they hated, and I didn't realize that you should not tell other moms
that your kid
you have
is sleeping.
Yeah, well. She slept every 3 hours like clockwork from the day she was born, and we were worried. We thought, should we wake her up? Should we be feeding her more? And the doctor, our doctor, was like, if she's sleeping, let her sleep. If it goes beyond like the normal routine that she's kind of developing, like if she starts sleeping for 6 hours and she's only a week old, maybe wake her up. But no, it was like clockwork. I could almost predict when she was going to wake up. She would eat. She'd be awake for a little bit, back down for another 3 hours. And I was like, this is amazing. It wasn't amazing. It was hard. Let me rephrase that.
It's there still was hard, definitely no hard. Matter
in, what. When you're still getting up every 3 hours in the middle of the night, it's still hard.
Truth.
But there are other moms who struggle immensely with sleep issues and stuff in the beginning. And there's so much we could dive into, from sleep training to cry it out to all of those things, that I know we'd be here all afternoon. And you'd be like, oh my God, please let me leave. I did not realize this was going to be so intensive. Okay, I want to get to my first question.
Sure.
This is from Mary. Mary wants to know, hold on. Let me make sure I get the right one. Mary wants to know, I have a 6-year-old that refuses to fall asleep without me in his bed. How do I help him feel confident? They've tried the sleep fairy that's rewards based and rewards based on if he falls asleep alone. She puts cool images on the ceiling. She leaves the lights on. Mm. Nothing is working.
Mm. Well, Mary, that's a great question. And I'm glad you included some of that additional information about, you know, some of the things that you're, you know, trying to use to improve the situation. And right out of the gate, I can tell you probably one of the biggest, most important things that you can do is set that sleep environment up properly to help elevate those important hormone levels so that the brain and the body want to do the sleeping. And the only thing left to fight it after that would be your child's will and the, you know, temporary process and temporary struggle of unlearning old habits and learning new habits, which he's absolutely capable of doing if we set him up for success first. So what I recommend in this situation, at least just with the, you know, the first pillar of sleep hygiene, which is the sleep environment, we have to go back and recreate what nature gave us to sleep in the first place, which is a cool, dark, quiet environment, you know. And, you know, out here it's a little bit difficult to condition those stimulating sounds that might be coming from outside of his bedroom window or bedroom door, but a proper white noise with a pink noise setting is really ideal in helping to do that. You want to get the temperature down.
What do you mean by
pink noise? Pink noise,
as opposed to the white
noise. It's a low frequency ambient sound, and it really does help the brain to just kind of tune out everything else and helps with sleep. You know, if there's a lot of activity in the house or parents are, you know, parents are awake after their kids need to go to bed if it's a 6:30 bedtime. And, you know, and a lot of times, and Mary, for your case, if he's not napping and he's, you know, he's just chronically has these sleep issues where maybe he needs you to fall asleep with him at night and his bedtime is later, dial that back earlier. Always err on the side of earlier than later so that you don't miss that final sleep wave. Get that temperature in the room down to somewhere between 68 and 71 degrees Fahrenheit so that he can regulate his core body temperatures, which elevates melatonin, that powerful sleep hormone, and make sure that you are really getting rid of all of those lights. That's probably one of the biggest things.
It's like nights. What about night lights? So like Chani has a night light. She's always had it. And sometimes she'll go to bed with like her toys and they're like strobing in her face. Yeah. And I'm like trying to pull them away from her. And it's, you know,
you'll have maybe a temporary battle where they tell you that they think your new sleep rules suck, you know, but get used to it. Cause it still happens in their teen years. Right. Trust me. But, you know, the light, what happens is in between each of our sleep cycles, we're all awake for about 1 to 5 minutes. We just don't know that we are. It's a very light, active, and behavioral stage of sleep. This is when, you know, we're rolling around, tossing around in our bed, you know, hogging all the covers, maybe sitting up and fluffing our pillow. We have no idea that we're doing it. We're often crying or talking or mumbling in our sleep or whatever. And kiddos, you know, they will even stand up in their crib and walk around. Their eyes are wide open. Mm-hmm. You know, the process of that seems like forever if you're a parent that's woken up in the middle of the night by that, watching that go down. We have no idea we're doing it. Your kids have no idea they're doing that. They're still technically asleep, but their eye gates during that time frame are open. And if that open eye gate should happen to catch the slightest streak of light coming from the closed window blinds or the indicator light on a baby monitor or a night light on in the room or that crazy dreaded disco turtle everybody's putting, you know, they're like flashing on the ceiling.
I know.
It's enough to arouse them all the way awake rather than, you know, keeping it nice and dark and they're
speaking
seamlessly.
It ends up being
seamlessly.
A stimulant instead of something to
the minute the eye gate, open eye gate catches that in that light behavioral active stage of sleep, it will awake them all the way up and that fragments their sleep and it makes it more difficult for them to connect to the next sleep cycle, you know, with a seamless transition. And so then within 48 hours of that going down, your child emerges officially sleep deprived, just as much so because of that fragmented sleep, just as much as if they had prolonged wakefulness or total sleep deprivation.
So the keys are for any age, maybe up to what, like 8 or 9, like to have total blackout, like dark, as dark as possible, as cool, you know, a cool
all the
room.
Way to 99, mama. We're not, I'm not playing here.
All the way up to 99, all the way to like
in the
right
coffin.
Now. Cool, dark,
and quiet.
And quiet. Mm-hmm. Now, I sleep with a fan on. I'm talking like adult stuff here. I sleep with a fan on.
Excellent.
I always have.
That's a perfect example of good pink noise.
Okay, good.
Yes.
Because I cannot sleep with a. If it's too quiet, I will hear every creak. Every, you know, my husband snores. Oh, Lord. Like, God bless him. He's my baby daddy, but he snores so bad. And it wakes me up. I'm a very light sleeper. The lightest little noise will wake me up. So for me, I have to have a little bit of that white noise, that fan or whatever kind of noise, fan going, or I'm like this.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Channing can sleep like a rock. She's like her dad. Mm-hmm. When she's out, she's out.
Nice.
Which is why I try to wrestle the strobe thing out of her hand. Like, what are you doing?
Right.
Okay, so my next question then, this is from Christina. She says, my 10-month-old daughter struggles to sleep at daycare. She logs an average of 2 30-minute naps at daycare, but naps at home just fine. Lately, I've had to wake her up from her naps at home because I don't want her oversleeping. Is there anything we could do to get her to sleep at school? They turn the lights out and play lullabies, but while that works at home, she's not responding to it at school.
Yeah, you know, sometimes if a child is already, many times parents don't realize their kid is waking up already overtired mm-hmm. from the night. And that happens when kids are missing that sleep wave, that final sleep wave of the night, and they're going to bed without enough of those important sleep hormones present at sleep onset. So then they're not able to get all four stages of their sleep cycles throughout the night. They're only getting that light, active, easily aroused, behavioral, you know, type of sleep. And when we're missing that slow wave component of each of our sleep cycles, stage 3, 4, then no matter how many hours we get at night, we're waking up already overtired and sleep deprived. Mm-hmm. And that just creates an insomniac like cycle that you get caught up in, because when you're overtired and you're sleep deprived, it makes it harder to sleep. So that's where we see naps falling apart a little bit, or micro napping, which, you know, even if they're getting 30 minutes, it's not a complete sleep cycle. They're not getting the restorative benefits from a nap. So they're even waking from those overtired. And then they're so, again, caught. The cycle continues. They're overtired by bedtime because the naps weren't restorative. And then they're, you know, they're going into another night of unrestorative sleep and waking up sleep deprived.
Literally like an endless cycle then. How do you break that cycle? Do you have to basically just do a reset on the sleep and like do a rigid hard in like sleep time?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because I don't know if kids are waking up in the middle of the night and not getting to that final stage of sleep, like mm-hmm. how would a parent know that that's happening?
Well, I mean, if sleep is fragmented at night, if their wake times are prior to 6 a.m. or they're wanting to sleep past 7, mm-hmm. And if their daytime behavior is kind of, you know, sketchy, there's some issues there with, you know, just irritable, cranky, uncooperative.
So those are clues they can be on the lookout for.
Oh, yeah. Those are all things that there is absolutely sleep deprivation going on. And basically, you know, if you look at a 3-year-old who's been rightfully diagnosed with ADHD and you look at a 3-year-old who just has poor sleep hygiene, line by line, all the way down the list of symptoms, they're not just similar. They're exactly the same.
Oh, how interesting.
Exactly. All the way down from top to bottom on that list of symptoms. And so, you know, makes you wonder how many kids are being misdiagnosed labeled and drugged for the rest
when
of their
really
lives.
When they're really just tired.
Yeah. And so, you know, my four pillars of sleep hygiene address every component of putting things back together with sleep wellness. So the first pillar is the sleep environment. The second is really knowing those true sleep cues when they're coming. Really being able to recognize them and being already prepared in advance with your pre-sleep routine, which is the third pillar of sleep hygiene. And that pre-sleep routine has got to be a specific routine that actually does, it's conducive to kickstarting the natural melatonin production, signaling to the brain and body that sleep is about
to
come,
yeah.
Creating a routine that is actually going to lay a foundation of emotional well-being so that when you are making changes to the sleep environment or your parenting responses, it, you know, keeps those stress levels low and helps them to sleep. Mm-hmm. And the fourth pillar is the timing of sleep, which is actually probably the juiciest pillar. You know, it's the most important
that window of opportunity.
Yes.
Once we found our window with Channing, it was like, oh, now I see she's sort of growing out of it. And we've kind of pushing her bedtime back just a little bit later, just by like half an hour. Because mm-hmm. we were doing the 6:30 thing for about a year. Mm-hmm. And she's almost 4.5 and she doesn't fight bedtime. But we noticed that even when we put her down at like 6:30 now, mm-hmm. she still stays awake in her room for like an hour.
Oh, yeah.
Playing.
Okay. So, yes, she's ready then to push that bedtime mm-hmm. later because you've done the hard work of getting her well rested.
Yes.
And now her body's able to manage and adjust that prolonged wakefulness. And she's 4.5. So, absolutely move that up to, you know, 7, 7:30.
Yeah, I was going to say, we moved it to about 7 now. And she still will stay in there and play, mm-hmm. stay awake and play for a little bit. But eventually, like around 8, she drifts off and quiets down
perfect.
And drifts off. So we're like, okay, we feel pretty confident that we can leave it around 7 now.
Yeah.
You never want to experiment with your kid, but also sometimes you don't have a choice.
You don't have a choice.
Sometimes we just have to try what works and like hope for the best.
Exactly.
Okay. So Sonia says, you're amazing. She says, let's see. My 5-month-old still wakes up 2 to 3 times a night to eat, not just nibbles. Mm-hmm. She eats a good 4 ounces each time. Can I expect this to change once more food gets introduced? Why can't she sleep through the night? Mm-hmm. She's on breast milk, and I give easy pureed veggies once a day. She's still a co-sleeper in our bedroom. Mm-hmm. She does go to sleep around 7 and wakes up around 6 or 7.
Okay. Sonia, right?
Sonia. Okay. And then she also wants to know why her naps are so short. There's a lot of questions in here.
We need a full consultation, yes. Sonia.
Yeah. Well, just we can just start with the beginning part.
Sure. Let's talk about, the middle of the night feedings. Yeah. That's always a big concern, especially around this 5-month period as mm-hmm. babies are transitioning into that second stage of infancy where, their physical vitals have been stabilized. From that fourth trimester and the first 4 months are absolutely when we need to feed around the clock and really be more mindful of, responding on demand, building that secure attachment, making sure all those physical vitals are stabilized, weight gain is happening, and positive breastfeeding behaviors and breastfeeding and breast milk supply are locked down. And that typically starts to come together and around 4 months. At the same time, and by the way, I am a certified lactation counselor with Healthy Child and the Center for Breastfeeding. So this is a big part.
Because sometimes they go hand in hand, right?
Yeah. Babies aren't born with a circadian rhythm, so they aren't able to, be sleep trained in a safe way at all. And nobody should ever attempt to sleep train a newborn all the way to the 4th month because they biologically can't do what we're asking them to do. Yeah. They don't have the ability to get to the slow wave components of their sleep cycles until 4 months. Some research is showing just a few weeks earlier, but I like to err on the side of caution and give it a couple extra weeks. I don't like to work with families until the 18th week properly dated.
Okay.
And that just gives that extra opportunity for full circadian rhythm development for night sleep. Mm. Once that comes into play and all of those things simultaneously, are changing and your baby is changing into that second stage of infancy, we often call that the 4-month sleep regression. It's actually a yes. progression.
Yeah.
But for us, it feels like a regression because we just figured out what to do after
and
4 months.
And then they go back. I remember all the regressions changes. And it was like, oh no, here comes another one.
Right. So what happens is parents typically, once babies are able to get slow wave sleep, which happens at about 4 months, they are actually able to now consolidate sleep at night and consolidate calories naturally during the day. However, it is a bit of a transition that we have to start evolving our parenting responses to meet and match these evolving developing needs for sleep. And that is hard when you have done something else all this time and it's been working up until now. And then, it's just kind of scary to make that transition. And most pediatricians, pediatricians don't receive pediatric sleep hygiene education in medical school or residency.
Right.
At most, according to a global study in 2013, it's about 2.5 hours total.
Yeah.
And so they don't know what to tell parents. They're often saying, well, maybe they're hungry, maybe they're teething. All those things are actually not the case.
Yeah.
And that's evidence-based science, basically. We have all these myths and we're terrified to make this transition. We don't know how to do it. We don't know what to do. And we don't know how to protect our breast milk supply, with all of these transitions. And so that's why, you really need to look at your unique baby situation. Oftentimes at 5 months, they're getting up, and they're crying out for you to come in and do the work for them to get them back to sleep. And the only way that they've ever known that that takes place is we stick a boob in their mouth or a bottle in their mouth, right?
Right,
so
right.
This is their sleep association.
Right.
They're tired. They're woken up in the middle of the night. Their sleep is fragmented. And they're calling out to have somebody help them get back to sleep fast, just like you're trying to do for yourself, which
yes.
is why we end up bringing our kids in the bed with us.
Yes.
Have the all-night open bar going on.
Right.
How we'll stand on the top of the refrigerator upside down breastfeeding. We thought we'd get back to sleep faster,
exactly.
Right? We just, we're sleep deprived. And that's just a natural biological drive for survival is to get back to sleep as fast as possible. It's the same thing for our kids. And so if we don't start evolving, to meet and match their evolving developing needs for sleep, and you can do that, by the way, at 5 months while still protecting positive breastfeeding behaviors and your milk supply. I do it every day. It can then become a situation where it's difficult to jump out of that cycle and change the habit loop of how we get from one sleep cycle to the next, how our babies, I should say, get from one sleep cycle to the next throughout the night. And even though they're chomping down and they're sucking down 4 ounces, mm-hmm. oftentimes parents are thinking, well, that means they're hungry. They need this milk.
Right.
Well, really what's happening is when they're really tired and miserable and they just want to get back to sleep fast, and that boob in their mouth is the only thing that they've ever associated with how they're sleeping. Do that.
Yeah. Comfort.
Heck yeah. They're going to suck hard and fast on that, mm-hmm. on that puppy because they think it's going to get them back to sleep faster.
Right.
Just like why we bring them in the bed and do whatever we got to do to get back to sleep ourselves faster. Yeah. So, you know, parents need to look at this with a different paradigm and really look at the science of sleep and the natural biological drive for survival, which is so much stronger than the need to eat, is to get back to sleep and consolidate our sleep so we can get that slow wave sleep within each of our sleep cycles.
What I love about what you say and what you bring to the table is the science-based aspect of it. I have a very practical side to my brain as well as the artsy fartsy actor side. You know, I'm can be creative and fun, but I'm also very analytical, and I love that there is a science behind this. So when you brought that element to the explanation to me, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense to me now. Like, I get it. And I think so often as parents, we get caught up because we're tired and we're exhausted and we just want to keep this thing alive. You know,
we're just surviving for the night, man.
And that we get caught up in a lot of the emotional side of it. Like, oh, my baby's crying. Obviously, they just want to cuddle with me. So they bring them in the bed.
Oh, yeah.
Or my baby's crying, like she really just wants this flashy light in her face all night. You know, I'm just gonna let her have it because I don't want her to be upset. I can see how we as parents get caught up in that emotion, and it's hard to disconnect because you never want to see your baby uncomfortable. That's you never want to see them in pain.
Right, exactly.
But I think that we have to. Ugh, people are gonna hate me for this, but like, man up a little bit, like ball up a little bit. Maybe that's not the right mom up a little bit.
Right.
And say, it's okay if I don't allow this to happen now, because long term it will serve them better.
Right. And it's just about learning to discern the difference between tiers of temporary struggle while learning a new skill or adapting to a new routine or parenting response versus tiers of suffering. We always respond to tiers of suffering. And, you know, and again, I go back to the four pillars of sleep hygiene. That's why that is so important as your foundation whenever you're going to sleep train or even just want to create, you know, a healthier sleep situation for your child. It helps you to discern the difference between the two. It sets your child up for success. You know, parents are shocked, you know, when they work with me that, you know, their baby that was waking up all night long to feed every hour and a half or whatever at, you know, 6, 10 months old, 5 months old. If you get that sleep hygiene in place and they're falling asleep with that abundant amount of those important hormones at sleep onset, the sleep is no longer fragmented. They're not waking up for a feeding. They don't feel teething pain. They don't feel hunger because they're getting all four components of their sleep cycles in. And that's really the key. So it just kind of makes the whole thing so much easier. And parents are like, wow, my kid didn't even wake up for 12 and a half hours. Oh my God. Should I be worried? And now they're worried because their kid isn't waking up or crying, you know? And I'm like, honey, it's a quality problem to have. You know, it's what you paid me for. And they're like, well, we didn't expect it to happen so quick and to happen so easily.
It's because I think there's a few like little minor changes and adjustments that you can make, but we have to not get in our own way and be afraid to do it.
Yes.
Because you're not going to harm your baby by using methods that involve science and, you know, tried and true techniques and things like that. Now, obviously, every case is different. Every baby is different. And every mom thinks that their baby is, you know, a particular circumstance. And, you know, like, my baby would never do this, or my baby.
Right.
But they're more alike than we think. I mean, I'm assuming you're the one that's done all the research. But just based on what I've read and what I've encountered with my mom friends, we're all a lot more alike than we think when it comes to our issues with our kids. And, you know, my hope with all of this is that some moms will find some comfort in knowing that if they try an earlier bedtime, or if they try to, you know, remove the nighttime light, or like one or two little things that they could just try and might make a huge difference in their baby's sleep, thus helping their brains grow stronger and they do better in school and they start doing having less tantrums, and like, that then is a little easier on mom. And like, you know, like it's all this like ideally this is the circle that's happening in my mind. And that's what I'm hoping that that people who are listening will walk away with from this. So
yes.
I'm so grateful for you for taking the time to come by and share your knowledge. Like, it's just, like I said, changed our world, and still we're still feeling the effects of it a year later. So
I'm so glad
you
to
know
hear
what
that.
You're talking about.
Thank you so much.
You guys, tell everybody really quickly where they can find you. If you guys want more information about Jenny, make sure you're following her on her social media channels, because you do a lot of Facebook Lives.
Yes.
Where you answer questions from people and give great information. So tell us about that.
Well, you can go to my Facebook page, Jenny June, Baby Sleep and Care. Jenny is spelled with an I, and then June is in the month. So Jenny June. I'm live every Thursday from 1 p.m. Pacific time to 4 p.m. and 4 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And every month I have, every week I have a different sleep topic, and I answer questions for like the remainder of the week. Parents who type into the comments. Also, you know, if you want to work privately with me, I do provide in-home consultations, overnight, you know, stays, all of that, as well as phone and Skype session packages. And you can, you know, look at all of that on my website, jennyjune.com. Or if you just want a, you know, 10-minute brief initial, you know, chat that's at no cost, you can call me on my 1-800 number, 1-800-322-4116, and I'll be happy to chat with you. I'm really hoping that everybody got some good takeaway today, and that you guys are finding your way and at least having a little more confidence in the process of providing well sleep for yourself and for your little one.
If anything, they're going to hate me because I said my baby's a good sleeper and we all need to man up. So literally the worst things that any mom could want to hear, they're like, F you, Heather Brooklyn. I'm like, I'm sorry. Don't hate me. You guys, I'm also going to put all this information that Jenny just mentioned up on motherhoodinhollywood.com, so you guys can find her links and information there as well. Jenny, thank you again. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me again.
Have a wonderful week, everybody. And remember, I'm not a perfect mom, but I can play one on TV. Bye.
Mama funny.
Balls.